I'd like to read this morning from The Prophet by Khalil Gibran on teaching. Then said a teacher, "Speak to us of teaching." And he said, "No man can reveal to you aught but that which already lies half asleep in the dawning of your knowledge. The teacher who walks in the shadow of the temple among his followers gives not his wisdom, but rather of his faith and his lovingness. If he is indeed wise, he does not bid you to enter the house of his wisdom, but rather leads you to the threshold of your own mind. The astronomer may speak to you of his understanding of space, but he cannot give you his understanding. The musician may sing to you of the rhythm which is in all of space, but he cannot give you the ear which arrests the rhythm, nor the voice that echoes it. And he who is versed in the science of numbers can tell you of the regions of weight and measure, but he cannot conduct you thither. For the vision of one man lends not its wings to another man. And even as each one of you stands alone in God's knowledge, so must each one of you be alone in his knowledge of God and in his understanding of the earth." And from the Bible this morning, I'd like to read from Psalm 36. "The transgression of the wicked saith within my heart that there is no fear of God before his eyes. But he flattereth himself in his own eyes until his iniquity be found to be hateful. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He hath left off to be wise and to do good. He devises mischief upon his bed, and he setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth evil, not evil. Thy mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens, and thy faithfulness reacheth unto the clouds. Thy righteousness is like the great mountains. Thy judgments are a great deep. O Lord, thou preservest man and beast. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God! Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wing. They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasure. For with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light shall we see light. O continue thy loving kindness unto them that know thee, and thy righteousness to the upright heart. Let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of wickedness remove me. There are the workers of iniquity fallen. They shall be cast down, and they shall not be able to rise." And from St. John, chapter 10. "Verily I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him that porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know the voice of the strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things he spake unto them. Then said Jesus unto them, Truly, truly, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep and fleeth. And the wolf catches them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is a hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am a good shepherd, know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so I know of the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And the other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it up again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. I'd like to speak today of abundant life. I've cut out a little joke here that I found funny. A mechanic talking to the owner of the car, and he says, "There's really nothing wrong with your car, sir. It just has a bad attitude." And the same could be said for our lives. There's really nothing ever wrong with our lives. We just might have a bad attitude. And the saying that attitude determines altitude is a wonderful thing to keep in mind. Within each and every one of our lives, we all have dreams and we all have wonderments and we all have visions to fulfill someday. And every one of our visions has a good purpose somewhere at its base anyway, even if not in the dream itself. And it has something of goodness, of fulfillment, of abundance that we wish to achieve. And when we don't see that coming into being, when we don't see our dreams coming true, then we become very dissatisfied. And some people become very angry and very bitter. Bitterness is a bitter seed, and it spawns more bitterness. And you can see it on the face of some people, that as they walk around, they look bitter. They look like they've had a very dissatisfying day, and they look like that every day. And they can't see anything good about life. You ask them what's good about their life, and they can't think of anything. They can only tell you of the miseries, of the terribleness of what's going on with them. And they'll reach back for years and years in experience to tell you about all the things that have gone wrong with them. And they keep themselves enslaved. They keep themselves in a small and tiny prison. You look at the person who has a positive attitude, who when they see you, they have a smile on their face. You like being in their company, and you feel good about being around them. And they see the goodness in life, and they see the possibilities. And even though they may be poor, they may have no money, things don't look good for them, still they always see the possibility for goodness and the possibility for life. And they seem to have energy for doing what it is they want to do. And there is always something more for them to give, for they are always giving people. When you contrast these two opposites, it's very easy to see which one has the more abundance in it, which one has the more goodness and possibility, and therefore the more godlike way to live. It is not that we should go around with rose-colored glasses and ignore the troubles in the world, or not see that there is poverty and starvation and some genuine and real problems in the world. But it is that we should use every problem as a means to find a solution. That everything that we see negative in this world should remind us of something that we can do for the world. When Eleanor Roosevelt was with her husband in the White House, she often went out and spoke for him. And one time a person from the crowd asked a very cruel question, and he said, "Did your husband's illness affect his mind?" And she said, "Yes, how else could it have been? Of course it affected his mind. It gave him more compassion, and it gave him more feeling for his fellow man. And this is a very wise answer, and something I think that all of us could ponder on a little bit. For suffering is the enigma of man. They say, if God is goodness, then how can there be suffering? If God is abundance, then how can there be lack? And yet, if we look deeper into life, we'll see that oftentimes, and always really in the long term of life, that in suffering, in lack, in not having all of our dreams immediately fulfilled, it gives us a compassion for those who also are likewise with us. If we look down on the whole world, if everything went perfect for us, how could we have feeling for those who things do not always go perfect for them? And if everyone had everything that they ever wanted, then how could we ever have the opportunity for giving? For without an empty cup, you cannot pour anything into it. Without somebody else having lack, without having somebody else have suffering, where would your opportunity be for givingness, for worthwhileness, for fulfillment? For God is constantly giving, and in our likeness with him, we too are constantly giving. And if we withhold our givingness, then we withhold a very deep and essential part of our nature. Givingness is part of our innermost nature, our innermost part. And if we do not find givingness in our life, if we cannot look back and see where we have gave to other people and gave with abundance, then perhaps we should change our ways. If we're always looking to the world to prove itself to us, if we are always demanding of it perfection without giving it in return, then perhaps we should regauge by what means we value this world and the things that come about because of it. When we look and we see war and we see suffering and starvation, what have we done to solve these problems ourselves? There's a saying in the 60s that if you're not a part of the solution, then you're a part of the problem. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Every one of us has something very valuable to give. We may not see that in the immediacy of today, but in the long-term, long-range goal, all of us play an integral part in the evolution of this earth. And you know, evolutionary steps usually come very slowly. Very slowly. And if we look to have things solved immediately, we're apt to be disappointed. And yet there is something inside of us that wants to evolve, wants to grow, wants to be greater than what it already has been. And we look to great people, and we look to ones who have gone before, and we admire their greatness, and we wonder about it, and we wish to emulate it. And yet within us is the seed of greatness. Within each and every one of us are the seeds that can exceed the greatness of anyone who has come before. Jesus said, "These things that I do, you shall do also, and greater things than these, for I go unto my Father." Those things which have been done before can be exceeded, and you can exceed them. But it is done stone by stone and step by step, one step at a time. As you build your life, build it consciously. You know, that's how you can truly speed up the evolution of yourself and of the world, is by consciously gaining control of your life. By Kriya Yoga, we consciously change our bodies and our consciousness. It is a conscious evolutionary step. And so too, as long as we live in ignorance of the things that hold us back and the things that hold us in slow evolutionary patterns, that long we will be kept in our karma. But as we begin to become conscious of the things that we do in our life, the things that hold us back, then we begin to change those things. And the very heart of it is our thought process. Where do our thoughts go to? When you look at your day, and you look how you handle problems, did you handle them in the best possible way? Did you look at all the possibilities that were available? Did you have compassion for the others that were around you? Did your anger at small situations, was it justified? Or were there other solutions available to you? What do you do with your thought process during the day? Do you use it constructively and usefully? Or do you waste it and waste the energy that is given by it? As we begin to consciously evolve ourselves and our spiritual evolution, we must take hold of our life. We must take hold of our thoughts and not control it as a stern taskmaster, but to begin to guide it as a ship captain would guide his ship, and paying attention to every part of the ship, not ignoring any part of it, but guide it through the water safely and constructively. Every part of us has a good origin. If God created us and God is all goodness, then every part of us is good. But it is we, as we mix, as a painter would mix colors and may do it inharmoniously or harmoniously. So we take our thoughts and we mix them in a mishmash of patterns. And sometimes our lives look like a modern piece of art where somebody just threw up this color and that color and they run down the canvas and no sense is made of it. Or others do it with true artistic genius. And they paint a beautiful, sculptured lifetime, filled with beauty, filled with harmony, filled with joy. And the choice is always ours, you see. We were given free choice in the beginning, and that free choice is never taken away from us. Many times, people wish that someone from outer space or someone from high above would come down and solve all of our problems for us. And yet, our free choice is never taken away from us. We always have free choice. And we may damn God for ever giving us free choice. But the fact is, it is our desire that will be fulfilled at every moment. And it is right here and right now that we begin to live our life, that we begin to take hold of our future and guide it as a wise captain guides his ship, and not just let it be blown here and there by the wind and by the current, but begin to choose our course carefully, to map out for ourselves a course that will take us away from danger and take us safely to our goal. And many storms may come up in the meantime, but these are not hindrances, but rather just difficulties that need to be gone through before we reach our goal. You see, all of life is oneness. There's no separation. When you look out at nature and see how nature behaves, this is how things go on inside of you. And even as there is seasons in nature, so there are seasons in you. And there are times when winter comes and all of your leaves fall off, and it is as if the sap runs back down to the base and there's not much life in you. And at those times, you wait and you dream of spring to come. And someday spring does come and the sap begins to glow and all of nature begins to awaken and life is renewed and reborn. And you go through the summertime, and all of the things grow, and there's much abundance, and there's much good in the world. And then fall time comes, and the change begins to come, and the chill begins to come. And you may dread the winter coming, and yet These are the internal seasons that flow in you, even as it flows in the outside. To be attached to the summer more than the winter causes great disappointment. But if you see all seasons as being in harmony with God's laws, then you become satisfied with what your lot is, and you keep on your course regardless of what's going on in your life. Yogananda used to ask astrologers to pick his very worst times, and they would tell him when his worst times were astrologically, and he still accomplished everything he set out to go for. He came up against uncommon difficulties, perhaps, but his free will and the power of God within him were stronger than the outside forces. Inside of each and every one of us is a power that is stronger than anything else in the universe. For in the meditation this morning, when you looked at the third eye point and you saw there the blue of the Christ, that is God's healing grace in the universe, and it pervades the whole universe. And there is nowhere that that is not. And if you put that into action in your life, the whole universe will respond to you. For all is connected, all is one. You know, Jesus was one time, one of the stories of him was walking through a crowd of people, and they were all touching him, and he was very famous at the time for healing. And there's many, many people who wanted to be healed. And as all these people were touching him and grabbing him, and he was walking through, all of a sudden he turned around and said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples looked really bewildered, and they said, "Well, hundreds of people are touching you. What do you mean, who touched you?" And he says, "I felt the power, the grace go out of me. Who touched me?" And there is one woman who had been waiting for him and had touched the hem of his garment, and the healing power, the healing grace of God had gone out from him, the God within him, and had healed her. And then she came forward. There were hundreds who were touching him. And yet he felt the power go out when that one special one received the grace. If your cup is full, then God cannot come into it. There is no room for him. If you are full of cares and worries and preoccupations, if your mind constantly ponders on things that are strictly of the mind, then where is God to come in at? Where is he to fill you up at? But when you let go of these things and you become an empty cup and you just invite God to come in your emptiness, then he will come in and he will fill you up and you will know him and you will feel his presence and taste his taste and hear his sounds and see the sights of the spiritual world that is within you. It is an incredible adventure. One time when I was in the Sahara Desert, thousands of miles from any kind of civilization, traveling in some military trucks through a war zone, and I was sitting out in the sun and wondering about God and just kind of contemplating and thinking about him. And all of a sudden, I felt Mother's presence, and I smelled her perfume. And I can assure you that I did not smell like that, nor did anybody else that I was with smell anything like that, having been in the desert for several weeks. And I felt such a warm glow inside of my heart. I felt so close to God. And even in this God-forsaken, so to speak, territory of nothing but endless sand dunes and endless trips, I felt God's presence there. You know, every day went by, they carried these long metal sheets on the side of the truck, and the truck would get stuck in the sand, and I thought, oh my God, we're here forever, the first time that happened. When we got done, we dug out the tires and laid down these metal plates and ran the length of the metal plates and got stuck again and did that and kept doing that until the truck got unstuck, got onto solid land, throw the plates on the side again and jump in the truck and off we go until we did that again. It's a fascinating world out there, and there's people who find ways of surviving and ways of being that match their environment. And each one of us have found ways to match our environment, to survive in the world that we live in. And our difficulties, the things that we face, are very much different than a nomadic Arab who lives in the desert, or a Tibetan yogi that lives in the Himalayas, or an African black man who lives in the jungle. And yet there is a common purpose. There is a common essence to each and every one of us. And you might say that the measure of a man and the measure of a woman is how much of that quality, how much of that common purpose, how much that God within each one of them recognizes. There are so many wonderful stories of people all over the world in their own ways, worshiping God, loving God, realizing God's power in their lives, realizing the goodness. And each one of these variations are wonderful and they're beautiful. But it should not obscure the thought, the idea that God exists within us. No one else in this world has God any differently than you have God. No one else in this world has any more chances of discovering the wonders and the beauties within than you do. And you should take your advantages. You should take advantage of the life that this Western world has to offer us and become in tune with God as He expresses Himself in this world that we live in. Every life is an individual life. Every person has their own unique path. And yet all paths lead to the same door. So in a sense, they all have a commonality. Use the yoga techniques that are taught to you. For they, of all the things that I have read about and used in my own life, the technique that we have is one of the simplest and one of the most powerful techniques that could possibly be given. To consciously be able to evolve your own life is giving you a tremendous power, a tremendous tool within your own life. And for me, it is a dream come true. It is something that I wondered and wondered about all the time I was growing up. And it is a dream come true. You know, there are so many wonderful things in God to discover. It is never getting old. And if we feel ourselves getting stale or old or stuck, then that is some problem inside of us. That is something that we are experiencing. But it is not a quality of God. It is not a quality of the Spirit that is inside of us. It is something in our own patterns, in our own mind, that is keeping us stuck where we're at. Discover the wonder. Demand that God reveal Himself to you. Demand this. And you'll know His presence. You'll know His wonder. You'll know His glory. There's so much to be experienced. Once when I was traveling in England, I had an experience of becoming very, very unhappy. And I was wandering through the streets and I was totally desolate. And I couldn't explain it. There is no outward reason for this to be true. And yet I couldn't bring myself out of it. And in my last effort, desperation, I asked God, please bring me out of this. And all of a sudden, I felt as if an aura of light come around me. And I felt lifted up, and I felt released from it. And I could see this light surrounding me. And it transformed and it changed me. And it took me out of that and took me into the oneness with all of life. And all of a sudden, I did not feel as a foreigner anymore. I did not feel as if in a strange land alone, with no one there to help me. But I felt very much loved. I felt very much at oneness with all that was around me. God is everywhere, equally present. And most of all, perhaps most important of all, He is inside of you. And you have the possibility, you have the capability to realize His presence within your life. These are important things, these are important issues that need to be considered in your life. You need to arrange your life in a certain way so that what comes first is most important to you. And you need to know what is most important to you so you can put what comes first. And once you realize that God is all of life and He is your life, then you will see that He is of the utmost importance, of the utmost need in your life. And you will arrange it so that He comes first. And then you can arrange your order after that. There's a wonderful children are really wonderful in their way of seeing God and asking open and frank questions. These are some things, some questions that kids ask after hearing about the creation story, and we all wonder about creation and some of the negative aspects of it. And some children think God did it. Kind of overdid it when He was doing His creation. One skeptic asked, did God really make all those awful animals like snakes and skunks and vultures and flies? And if He did, whatever for? And other questions were, why did God have to rest after He made the world? I think that's a very logical question. And what does God do when He rests? That kind of makes you think. And what does God do in His spare time? I don't know. Does God have any spare time? It's wonderful to contemplate on God, and it's wonderful to think on the mysteries of this creation. We shouldn't be going into it as afraid or is so rigid in our belief system that we can't give a little and have a little humor and have a little flexibility. We should approach God as a child and see His mysteries even as a father would reveal the mysteries of the universe unto a child. And say, oh Father, what is the next step? What is the next thing you want me to discover and recover about myself? It's a wonderful movie that's recently been out called Lady Hawk, and the young man has lots of wonderful conversations with God. And one of them was at near the end of the story. He says, well, Lord, he says, we come full circle now. He says, I'd like to think there's some higher purpose to all this. He says, it'd reflect well on you anyway. I think we all like to think that there's some higher purpose in all this. And when we sit down and we balance things out in ourselves and we find God existing within ourselves, then the higher purpose is revealed to us and we feel the higher purpose. You know, for the pessimist, the one who is eternally pessimistic in his mind, to be always negative and never think that there is anything higher about this world, it's a tremendously depressing view of the world. And when you feel the higher purpose in your own life, and know that there is a higher purpose in your own life, then it gives you a sense of freedom, a sense of beauty, a sense of wonderment, a sense of fulfillment. So be patient with yourself. Be loving towards God. And find the joy in living. Oftentimes we take this world so seriously. And it is not all that serious. For there is joy in this world. There is a certain sense of comedy. And there is certainly wonderment in all that goes on around us. And seek your higher purpose. What is your true purpose in living? What is the highest purpose in your life? And seek the answer from God, not in trying to figure it out intellectually, but ask God until he shows you what the next step is for you. And even if you don't know all the steps in between to your final goal, if you know what your next step is, then you know enough. It is enough to know what the next step is. And to take that in faith, knowing that it will take you to its highest goal. The goal of the summit of God consciousness, God awareness, where you will enter into God's heaven. And you may have the freedom to move in or move out, but you do have absolute freedom. And you enjoy all of God's life. Not just bits and pieces, but all of it. There's one other thing that I read about Eleanor Roosevelt that I thought was just wonderful. And she said it when she was 77 years old. And she still got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and went to bed after midnight and had such a busy life. And she said, "I could not at any age be content to take my place in a corner by the fireside and simply look on. Life was meant to be lived. One must never, for whatever reason, turn his back on life." And I think if we were ever discouraged, and if we ever feel like giving up, that we should remember that life was meant to be lived, that we're here for a purpose and for a reason, and that is to have life and to have it more abundantly, to have so much life that we can't fill that 24 hours in a day is not enough, and that we should be so involved with life that our lifetime will pass by in abundance, in prosperity, in wonderment and in joy, and totally dedicated towards the one higher purpose, God. And when at the end of this life, God calls us and we go unto him, then with pride and with joy, we lay down our life before him. And we say, "This I offer unto you as I have offered it all of my life. And this I freely give to you, as I have freely given all of my life." Now let us pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my body. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bless.